Yo, mic check 1 2 1 2. What's going on, family? Y'all are now tapped back into the Low End Theory, man. I'm your host, Stay Fresh JF. Y'all know who it is. Look, today is a somber episode, man. You know, usually I'd start the show with some, you know, with a joke or some upbeat optimism, man. But especially considering the fact that I'm here in our nation's capital, man, in Washington, D.C., you know what I mean? And literally, you have to be living under a rock or just purposefully, not tapped in on any sort of level, societally, you know what I mean, or otherwise, politically, or otherwise, you know what I mean, if you really don't know what's been going on, you know, over these last few days. And so I want to start the show off by saying a few names, man. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Eric Garner, Sandra Bland, Philando Castile, Tamir Rice, Freddie Gray, Alton Sterling, and the list goes on and on, you know what I mean, of unarmed young black people, or black people in general, regardless of age, regardless of generation, regardless of demographic, man, regardless of religion or sexual orientation or political affiliation, man, any of those things, man, that continue to divide us, especially at a time right here, right now, when unity amongst us is paramount. You know what I mean? I want to start the show off by saying those names, because those names have been the inspiration for all of our consolidated efforts, man, over the last few days, man. And I've been standing lockstep, you know, protesting, demonstrating, mobilizing with the people, man. You know what I mean? Especially considering that I'm from DC, man. I'm from the dirt, man. I'm from the soil. And I'm gonna try my best not to get emotional, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, it's definitely something that as a human being, it provokes you. It provokes those type of emotions, you know what I mean? It provokes you feel provoked on so many different levels. You know what I mean? Because of generations on generations of systemic, you know, legislated law, passed through law, you know what I mean, of oppression and subjugation, exploitation, you know what I mean, provocation. And not to get too, you know, too analytical about it, or, you know what I mean, not to get up on the soapbox, but this is the Low End Theory, man. This is my shit. This is my show. This is something that I feel like is so much bigger than myself. You know what I mean? I'm just a working part in the counterculture that is trying to bring an end, you know, to systemic racism, man, to state legislated executions by people who operate with impunity, man, people who murder, you know what I mean, and are really just working arms of, you know what I mean, of the system that's already been in place, that's been working. So let's not, I'm not going, you know, I'm trying not to to go too off on a tangent, man. I really want to make this as clear and concise and as understandable as possible, you know what I mean? So I'm going to stick to what I'm, you know, I mean, even beforehand, man, I had to seriously write an outline, because I knew where my emotions was going to take me, you know? But I think I want to start off by saying what I've been seeing, man, just what I've been seeing, just as a consciously thinking human being, as a person who's critical about the world that they live in, you know what I mean? I'm critical about the things that I see, the things that I experience, the things that I put myself in, you know what I mean? Be it purposefully, or be it just, you know, as a consequence of me just being alive, you know what I mean? There are certain things and experiences that just come with my experience as a human being, as being a young black man, you know what I mean? There are certain things that I didn't ask for, but these things were inherited to me, you know, like the mantelpiece that I have to take up. You know what I mean? By being a consciously thinking human being, and by being someone who's very critical of how they live, you know. And down here in D.C., man, it's been something to see, man. It's seriously been something to see. I want to say last Friday, I decided to take a trip down to the mall, down to the National Mall, not the mall. Come on, y'all. You know what I'm saying? If you really think that, but I went down to the mall, man. I went down to the National Mall because I knew that that's where the people were going to be mobilizing. That's where the people were going to be, you know, just that was going to be not even a safe space, because it's the furthest thing from space. But that was the place that we had to be in order to let these people know that this shit is not a game anymore, man. This shit is something that we can't continue to take lightly, or the approaches that we've been taking in solidarity. It's just not working, you know, those approaches ain't working anymore. And I knew that that place was going to be the first step that I was going to have to take, you know, to see, just to check the temperature of the people. And while I was there, man, I saw a multicultural coalition of people, young people in particular, you know what I mean, looking to express the anger, man, express the hurt, express the vitriol that we all felt collectively, you know what I mean? And it was a beautiful thing, you know? It was a beautiful thing. It was no fear. It was no intimidation, regardless of the fact that they had, you know, SWAT armed police personnel front and center protecting the White House, you know, protecting the collective interests of the empire, the collective interests of, you know, the people of the oppressors, essentially. Not to sound too dramatic. Not to sound too dramatic. Not to sound too dramatic, but that's what was going on when I got there, you know? That's what was going on when I got there, and it was a beautiful thing. But since that happened, I gotta say, man, I've been sort of disillusioned by it, you know, by the continuing, and day by day, you know what I mean? Those same actions were being taken by people who cared, by people who felt like I felt, like I'm sure that y'all feel. If y'all are tapped in on any certain level politically, economically or otherwise, I know that y'all had to feel the exact same way, you know? Because this shit is not new. None of these things are new. Police brutality is not a new phenomenon in America. I think what is new is the amount of people, young people in particular, that are tapped in to exactly what's going on at this exact time. And something that angered me even furthermore was how people continually found a way to defend the bullshit. People continuously found, they use it as like a political volleyball to go back and forth. Well, it isn't police brutality. We don't really know what's going on. Well, it isn't necessarily systemic racism. Those are just things that have happened to all of us, and it just so happens to disproportionately affect Black people. Well, that isn't mass incarceration. Those people are just criminals. It's these things, you know, these political volleyballs that the opposition, that the enemy essentially uses to politicize our struggle and make it seem as if, you know, we're paranoid. And if we are paranoid, at what point does the opposition stop and say, well, their paranoia is justified? When do we stop being, you know, when do these things stop being a figment of a paranoid psyche and really just start being expressions of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, by people who have never fully gotten their full citizenship by a country who refuses to acknowledge their humanity? But let me not go off on it. I'm going to stick to my outline, y'all. I'm going to stick to my outline. I'm not going to get too upset. I promise. I swear I won't. I swear I won't get too upset. But that's what I've been seeing. And I'm sick and tired of our collective struggle for equality, for justice, for understanding, really being used as a political volleyball between liberals and conservatives and independents. Now, I do understand that at a certain point, you know, in order for real legislative action to take place, meaning the defunding of police departments, meaning the influx of resources and monies being poured into underprivileged communities, especially communities that are predominantly occupied by Black people, by Latino people, in order for those things for those type of changes to really take effect, legislative action has to be taken, and it does have to be politicized to an extent. You know, the vote does matter, but how many times has the vote rendered itself inconsequential? You know what I mean? How many times have we collectively gone to the ballot box and seen our vote fall on deaf ears? I was a child when George Bush was in the White House. I was a child when Bill Clinton was in the White House. I was a teen when Barack Obama was elected into office. I'm a grown man now, you know? And the person that's occupying 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, which is 10 minutes from my home, is a bigot and a xenophile. And a xenophobe, you know? And his constituency is the exact same. But again, I'm not going to get too much on the soapbox. You know, I'm tired of our narratives being hijacked and turned into political volleyballs. I'm tired of people latching themselves onto our struggle as if it's some type of trend, as if it's some type of weekend getaway. Oh, you know, and I heard this a lot from the older generation. Oh, you know, I'm not a racist. I stood lockstep with people who marched with King, and you know, I've read the speeches of Malcolm X, and I agree a lot with what he said. You know, and it's one thing to inform yourself, to educate yourself about these, you know, about these movements and the people who spearheaded them. But it's a whole other thing to actually dedicate your life to it. And that's one thing that as a black person, we don't have the luxury of saying, I can't lend my life to it, because like it or not, our lives are subject to these experiences, whether we like it or not. So to my white allies that have been out there standing lockstep with us, making it known that they want to be on the right side of history, making a concerted effort to let us know that you care, and that contrarily to what your peers might think, your silence is betrayal. You know what I'm saying? Your silence is complicity. Your silence actually lends itself to the working parts of institutional racism. I want to tell y'all this, man. I appreciate you. But how many of y'all are willing to actually make it a part of y'all lives the way that we don't have the luxury to? How many of y'all are willing to do that? Because this comes from a place in me, man, that I was there. I was at another mobilization with the people down on Pennsylvania Avenue. And again, I don't want to make this seem as if I'm trying to pedestalize myself or make myself seem more superior than, or whatever the case is. However you can construe this other than where my intentions lie, I want to let it be known that, again, I appreciate anybody and everybody that came out to consolidate with the people, you know what I mean, and stand lockstep with the people. But what I saw, man, what I took umbrage with, man, was it started to become more like a party. It's like the narrative started to be lost because, you know, black people are very resourceful people. That's one thing about our people that I love. One thing about our people that I absolutely love, man, is that we make the best out of the worst situations. And that's been proven to be the case over and over and over again. You know what I mean? With slavery, we found a way to be resourceful. They wasn't going to kill us all. We persevered. Jim Crow, they wasn't going to kill us all and incarcerate us all. Civil rights, they wasn't going to incarcerate us all, kill us all, lynch us all. You know what I mean? And we found a way to be resourceful, and we found a way for the world to fall in love with our collective struggle. Through those processes came the most beautiful expressions of humanity, man. Blues, R&B, gospel music, hip-hop music, jazz music. You know what I mean? Expressions of people who are oppressed and institutionalized. You know what I'm saying? We danced our way through it. We sang our way through it. We rapped our way through it. We played our way through it. You know what I mean? And in that, from that perspective, you know, I can put a little water on my fire. But, you know, I felt like a lot of the narrative was lost, man, because people, you know, took it as an opportunity to make it about themselves, to make it about themselves, to dance and sing and prostrate, hug police officers. You know what I'm saying? Not to say that there aren't good police officers, but we not there for no hugging and kissing and no love fest with moving pieces of the institution, man. We not there for that right now. We not there for that right now. And that's what angered me, man. That's what kind of made me upset, you know? Kind of made me upset, yo. Kind of made me upset. But I wanted to be there with my people, and I love my people, and I understand where it comes from. I understand that through pain comes the best expressions of art. You know what I'm saying? I totally understand that, 100%. You know? But I kind of feel like there's a time and place for all of that. Who am I to dictate that? I'm nobody to dictate that. But, you know, that's essentially where that's what I felt watching that, you know? That's essentially where I was coming from, seeing that. That's how it made me feel. That was my initial gut reaction. Yeah, man. How many people are there for solidarity? How many people are there because they actually want to evoke change and truly want to make this thing a part of their lives the way that black folks have to. And even amongst our own, how many people are there for that? And how many people wanted to just get out of the house because they were tired of being on quarantine? You know? I'm critical of these things. I think a little bit more concretely about these things and what I want to believe, or what I've been seeing from people. And maybe I haven't taken it upon myself to talk to these people, but that's essentially how it came off to me. You know? And I think it's in that spirit that I see Police Chief Mike O'Mara. I want to say he's a police chief. He's a chief of police in New York, who spoke in front of the press, backed by his unhooded Klansmen, bunch of self-centered, self-serving jackasses who call themselves police officers, who can't even stomach the experience of being a young black person in this country for a week because they got up there and cried, talking about how they don't want to be vilified, how they don't want to be animals, how they don't want to be stereotyped. You know, it's real funny. And I tweeted this. It's real funny, man, that when a black police officer takes off his badge and his gun and is ununiformed, you know, he's another black man subject to the mercy of a bigoted cop. You know what I mean? Whereas a white man that's not in uniform, specifically that police chief, when he's out of his uniform, when he doesn't report to his precinct or his office or wherever the fuck he might operate out of, you know what I'm saying? He's just another white man enjoying the civil liberties of his country. It's real interesting, man. It's real interesting how the psyche of a bigoted person starts to get exposed when the other side of the oppression starts to speak with impunity. We're starting to speak with impunity without fear of pushback, which we should. You know, it's real funny how, you know what I'm saying, how the bigots will essentially expose themselves by saying nothing, or by saying the things that they think they wouldn't say if they weren't put into positions to have to say something. It's real interesting to me. You know, people who I thought were friends, people who I thought were allies, they ain't shit. And your silence speaks volumes. You not saying anything speaks volumes. It speaks real loud and clear to whom it might concern, to whom that statement might concern. Yeah, man. Our collective struggle ain't no fucking weekend affiliation. It ain't that, man. This thing has to be bigger than that, man. This has to be something that has to just be a part of your adopted lifestyle. And if you black, believe it or not, you never had a choice in the matter in the first place. You understand? It's just really, man, all of these things are very telling, man. And there's so many things that I can really try to get into, but I know that I had to use the low-end theory, you know what I mean? A platform that I'm very much so passionate about to speak on these things, man, because it's insane to me. You know, walking on Pennsylvania Avenue, man, and I'm seeing funnel cakes being sold and ice cream for sale. Like this is an opportunity for people to capitalize. You know what I mean? To capitalize on, to further their own individual agendas beyond the collective agreements. Those agreements being that black life has to matter. Our black life has to matter. Other people using it as a vehicle to further their own separate agendas that their individuality might find themselves, you know what I'm saying, might funnel themselves into affiliation, meaning our LGBTQ allies or LGBTQ brothers. Because I'm gonna tell you something, bro, sis. Before you're gay, before you're a lesbian, before you're trans, before you're a Q, before you're any of those things, you're an African American, you black. Before you're a Republican or a Democrat, you're black. before you're an independent. You're black. Before you're any of those other things that you might use to mobilize on a separate accord. You're a black person, yo. You're black. Not to say that you're, you know, your individuality might not is going to pale in comparison to your blackness. Absolutely not. I wouldn't say that. But our collective struggle before I'm a heterosexual man, before I'm an independent or a Democrat, before I'm any of those things that I might use as a separate vehicle to advance my own personal agenda. I'm an African American, yo. I'm black. And these are things, these divisive sort of really divisive, you know, vehicles that people are using, man. That shit irks the hell out of me. It really does, man. And I'm not going to let my emotions get away with me, but I heard Billy Porter say that, you know, a prominent black gay man who's an amazing artist, whose artistry I have immense respect for, a deep affinity for. This man said that black people have treated gay people like whites have treated, like white supremacists have treated black people in this country. How ignorant is that? What institutional power collectively do black people have to enforce subjugation upon gay people? Not to say that their struggles haven't been significant. Not to dismiss the struggle that gay people collectively have to persevere through. I'm not diminishing that in any way, shape, or form. I'm not diminishing that. And I'm not gay, so I wouldn't know what that struggle is like. But I do know for sure that what they have to go through and the pain that they have felt, specifically from their own, from our own, from black people in particular, pales in comparison to what white supremacists have subjected us all to, regardless of our sexual orientation. That was ignorant. That was ignorant and stupid and childish. And I'm sorry, Billy Porter, but our struggle is not about your own separate agenda that you're trying to use as a vehicle to promote a well-needed and much necessary change. I understood what he was saying. I understood where it came from. But it's not the time, man. It's not the place, man. That angered me, man. It touched me in a real place, man. It touched me in a real place. So, again, I'm trying not to veer off the path. As much as I, you know, trying to rear it in as much as I can, man. And if this is your first time listening to the Low End Theory, man, I'm usually a lot less angry than this. I'm usually a lot more jovial. I'm usually a lot more optimistic, you know, upbeat, cracking a lot of jokes, having a lot of fun, talking about the things that I care about, specifically hip hop culture. You know what I mean? Specifically the music that I fell in love with so long ago. You know what I mean? Seriously, man, you know. If this is your first time listening to the Low End Theory, man, I want to tell you thank you for listening. I want to tell you that I appreciate your support. I want to, you know, remind you to go ahead and subscribe so every time I drop a new episode that you can go ahead and listen to this. But this is not, this episode right here, man, is not to, I'm not going to use this as a vehicle to try to promote my own separate agenda, you know. This is specifically a response to my abilities, man. This is a responsibility episode. This is an episode specifically intended to let people know that the Low End Theory is very much so socially conscious, very much so politically conscious, very much so politically, I already said that, but you know, economically and otherwise, all those things, you know, very much so tapped in. And these things have to be said, man, by somebody who has the gall enough to say it, you know? Shout out to a few of my bros that I saw down there. A few of my sisters that I saw down there. Billy Krishan, I see you, love. My man Ill Will from Southwest, I see you, man. Y'all was down there mobilizing with the people, making sure that the people stay hydrated, that the people stay, you know, stayed fed, tending to the people's psychological well-beings, man. My man Charles Franklin, I see you. You know, the artist community in DC that really showed up every single day, that was standing out there lockstep with the people, you know, that I saw on multiple occasions. You know, we inherited this struggle, man. We inherited this struggle, and this is something that we willingly take on, because it's not going to be in a whole other generation of this. And I'm going to end the episode with some love, man. I saw, you know, I've been seeing First Take every morning. I love ESPN. I loved, even though Jemele Hill might have left ESPN, huge shout out to Jemele Hill. I love Jemele Hill. I stand with her with anything and everything that she said ever since she left ESPN. And I've been seeing the social change, the real social change among the mentality of the people. And that's what I love, man. That's what I love most. You know, seeing how Netflix has stood lockstep with our collective struggle, seeing how things that we arbitrarily just go through in our lives every day without, you know, necessarily attributing any sort of social responsibility to these companies, you know, those are the things that I feel like have to change in order for there to be a real shift in, you know, the collective consciousness, man. And that's all beautiful. It's all a beautiful thing. I'm loving to see that. We got to figure out a way to get this guy out of the damn White House, man. Cause, you know, when the National Guard showed up, I was like, yeah, I don't know about this, y'all. I'm out. I'm gonna be real. I seen the National Guard and I was like, all right, y'all, I think, the rest of this fight is going to have to be fought on the podcast platform. You dig? We're going to have to figure something else out. But, you know, again, you know, I think the collective sort of social shifts that I've been seeing has been the most beautiful part of this. But I don't want it to stop there. I don't want it to end there. And it shouldn't stop there. And it shouldn't end there. You know what I mean? So again, man, you know, I want to say rest in peace to all our fallen. You know what I'm saying? Not to be too dramatic, not to be melodramatic, not to be extra, not to do too much or whatever, you know what I'm saying, that you might be able to, you know, attribute to this last statement. But, you know, again, man, rest in peace to George Floyd, who was the beacon, who was the spark, you know what I mean, who was the spark for all of this change, because of the irrefutable evidence that was given, captured on tape. You know, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Eric Garner, Sandra Bland, Philando Castile, Tamir Rice, Freddie Gray, Alton Sterling, Michael Brown. You know, and the list goes on and on, man. I want to tell those families, man, thank you for your sacrifices, you know, and stay strong, man. You know, this shit ain't going in here, man. It doesn't end here, man. It doesn't end here, man. For sure. So until the next time that we check in, y'all, you know, hopefully it's sooner rather than later. For sure, it's going to be sooner rather than later. We definitely going to talk about, you know, the new Freddie Gibbs project, Alfredo with the Alchemist. We're going to holler about that. We're going to speak about that. I got to stop loafing and talk about this Kehlani album. That Kehlani album was fire. We got to rap about that. You know, and shout out to the Bay Area, man. The Bay Area been getting the cracking for forever. Definitely going to touch bases about that. We're going to get into all of that, man. But this episode had to be said, man. This episode had to be recorded. And, you know, if this is your first time listening, man, check in with me. I'm at StayFreshJF, StayFreshJF. That's on Twitter. That's on Instagram. You know what I mean? That's on Snapchat. Follow me and all that good stuff. Yo, man, again, man, this is the Low End Theory. I want to thank y'all for checking in with me, y'all. For sure. Peace and love. Until the next time, man. Peace.